We welcome you to a celebration of a homegoing. The celebration of God's work through the life of Charles Joseph Wenzel. Again, welcome. We're focusing tonight on the life of Charles Joseph Wenzel, a man whose life could be characterized by that great hymn of the church, "How Firm a Foundation." He was a man whose life was firmly built on the foundation of the Word of God. Born in Irvington, New Jersey, he was a professor of Greek, theology, and Bible at Columbia Bible College and Seminary for the past 37 years. He served in the Army as a chaplain's assistant from 1943 to 1945. He attended Columbia University and received a bachelor's degree from Columbia Bible College, a Master of Divinity from Fuller Theological Seminary, and an honorary doctorate from Carver Bible College in Atlanta, Georgia. He served as general director of the Bethel Bible Camp in Columbia for 30 years and taught a Bible class at the Victory Servicemen Center for 20 years. He was a member and elder emeritus at Columbia Evangelical Church, having served as interim pastor there from 1975 to 1976, a man greatly used of the Lord, and a man whose sole aim in life was to serve the Lord he loved so much.
I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be his than have riches untold. I'd rather have Jesus than horses or lands. I'd rather be led by his nail-pierced hand than to be the king of a vast domain or be held in sin's dread sway. I'd rather be faithful to his dear cause. I'd rather have Jesus than worldwide fame. I'd rather be true to his holy name than to be Jesus and anything.
When Charles Wenzel came to Columbia Bible College, he first studied under Dr. Robert C. McQuilkin, the founding president of Columbia Bible College. His first service as teacher at the Bible College was under Dr. G. Allen Fleece.
We became close friends because there was opportunity, as the school was smaller, to be together a good bit. And as long as I've known him, which was good many years, he has always been both loyal and utter, and his ability as a teacher was much appreciated by the students. And I couldn't say too much for the contribution he made to college when I was there, and his kind of law and ability is the greatest asset you could have in a faculty.
For the last 20 years, Charles Wenzel served as professor under the presidency of Dr. Robertson McQuilkin.
My friendship with him goes back to school days here at Columbia. He had come back from the war, and though he was a year behind me, he was older and had begun his family. I remember visiting him in what we affectionately called the Rat House down in Center Columbia. And it was in those days that our hearts were knit. His so committed to the Lord. And of course, a great student, straight A's wherever he went. And then I went on to seminary. A year later, he followed. I was married by then, but he got a head start on me, and actually he won our race for seeing who could have the most children. And the Lord gave Charlie 8 children, Peggy, 8 wonderful children, 4 of them in the Lord's service, the 4 sons in the Lord's service, ordained ministers for the most part, and then the 4 daughters, also very wonderful girls. You who are not parents of older children will not understand this, perhaps, but I had hoped for 1 or 2 of those daughters to become daughter-in-law of mine, but that didn't work out. But they are wonderful girls, and 3 of them living here in Columbia. And one time in seminary, when some of us got together in his apartment, and we were debating who was the poorest, and we were struggling along with this and that, and we said we were down to hamburger, and Charlie won. He said they were down to peanut butter. For many years, he was sort of the workhorse of the faculty, teaching 16 hours, sort of unheard of nowadays, but he didn't think anything about it. And of course, he made Greek learnable. For years, I would hear reports back from seminaries where our students had gone, and they said, "I learned Greek." He had unique ways of teaching it. I would hear reports of erasers hurled at students who missed a declension of, other things, Charlie's way of doing it. But I learned yesterday of something I had not known, that there was always a devotional word, a spiritual word in every class. Now, in Greek grammar, that's something, isn't it? Well, that was Charlie. However, more than in the classroom, his extra class activities. Yesterday, an alumnus called me from a distant city for some help on a matter. And when I told him that Mr. Wenzel was with the Lord, he was stunned. And then, between his sobs, he said, "He was a very precious man." He said, "Many times he prayed with me." And he paused for a minute, and then he said, "And wept with me." That was Charlie. Even in the hospital in his last days, he kept up his good humor. I remember one occasion speaking to him last week, and I gave him some compliment. Of course, that's hard for him to take, a compliment. And he held up his fingers and he said, "Do I see you hiding behind your fingers?" And he had them crossed. In other words, that was his way of denying that what I had said was true. But even then, at his lowest ebb, I saw him soon after the massive heart attack 2 weeks ago. And they didn't know whether he'd be rational. They didn't know whether he could He was there. He was so weak. But he began, as soon as he saw me, he began to speak of a friend and saying, I found a book that will help that person. And he raised up in his bed and a firm grip in his hand, thinking of others always. I know each of you has your own list, but for one of my very best friends, Charles Wenzel was humble, very wise, not just smart, he was that, but wise, a loyal friend, very loving for his family, for his students, impeccable character, godly aspirations, one of the greatest blessings to us. He understood and was committed to and embodied what Columbia Bible College is all about, to know him and to make him known. He was a pace setter. I pray that God will give us many alumni like Charles Wenzel, and that God may give us many faculty members like Charles Wenzel.
Now we hear an example of Charles Wenzel preaching, exhorting students in the chapel of Columbia Bible College and Seminary.
But whether he was well received or completely rejected, he still had a purpose. Never stopped him, whether it was this way or that way. He had one purpose. He was separated unto the gospel. Sometimes, as you see him, he was perfectly free. He could go where he wanted to go. Other times, you see him in prison. Long months in prison. Didn't make any difference. He was separated unto the gospel, whether he was wandering about as a free man or in prison. Separated unto the gospel. Sometimes he was accompanied by others. He had fellowship with others. He had friendship there, Christian friends working with him. Sometimes he was deserted by all. All have forsaken me, he said. Didn't make any difference. He was separated unto the gospel. Change that. He had a purpose for life. Nothing changed that at all. Now a question has to be asked then. Do you have a purpose for life? Have you been separated unto a work, unto a purpose in life? Or are you a Christian hippie? You know, just wandering around. What's it all about? Do you have a purpose? Let me ask you another question. Is it the right purpose? You may have a purpose and it may not be the right one. Do you have the right purpose? Well, if your purpose for life originated where Paul's did, it'll be the right one. You know where Paul's purpose came from? Here he says he was separated unto the gospel of God. Actually, that phrase doesn't tell us where the separation came from. But in Galatians chapter 1, verse 15, he tells us where his purpose came from. Because he speaks about God who separated me from birth. From the very time he was born, he was separated by God, appointed by God. You know, not every purpose comes this way. When I was around 21 years of age, before I became a Christian, I set upon a life purpose. I was going to be a minister because I felt it was a good racket. I felt it was something which would give security. I saw my father had had his own business and he was losing everything during the Depression. I saw jobs for big companies like Standard Oil or New Jersey Bell Telephone Company, and they lost their jobs. And I began to think, well, now what can I get into so that when I get married and have a family, I'll have some security? And I thought, well, they've got to have ministers. They just can't fire all the ministers. Got to have somebody around to. People are going to die. They're going to have to be buried. People want to get married. Got to have ministers around. So I went to my pastor and I explained what was on my heart. And he thought it was a good idea too. And he took me to a seminary and they gave me a scholarship. Didn't even ask if I believed in God. You see, I was setting before myself a purpose, a job, a task, but it was coming from me. I wasn't even saved. That's a far cry from being separated unto the gospel. And but for the grace of God intervening there, I don't know where I'd be today. Following that purpose. So you see, we say Paul was separated. We might think at first, well, this is just Paul's idea. Or we might say, oh, no, he didn't get it from himself. But he had a terrific teacher in school. Man, when he was going to school, he had the most famous teacher. He probably got it from Gamaliel. No, didn't get it from Gamaliel. That's not the place to get your life's purpose. Well, maybe he got it from his generation. You know, you always want to get on the bandwagon. If everybody else is doing something, we'll do it. And some of you are going to face this problem when you get out. Right in Christian work. Oh, everybody's emphasizing this. Certainly this is good. We'll get on the bandwagon. Paul says, no, that's not the way I got my purpose in life. I've got a job to do. I've got a task to do. But I got my purpose from the Lord himself, from God. God separated me from my mother's womb, from the time of my birth. God separated me. Now, Paul had to receive that, though. He had to know about that. He didn't know about it. When Paul was 2 years old, he didn't know about it. When Paul was 25 years old, he didn't know he was separated under the gospel. For almost half of his life, he didn't know he was separated under the gospel. But then one day, the Lord revealed that to him. He tells about it in the book of Acts. As he stands before the king there, before King Agrippa. He's telling what happened, and he says in verse 15 of Acts 26, and I said, who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. But arise and stand upon thy feet, for to this end have I appeared unto thee, to appoint thee a minister and a witness, both of the things wherein thou hast seen me, and of the things wherein I will appear unto thee, delivering thee from the people and from the Gentiles, unto whom I send thee, to open their eyes, that they may turn from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive remission of sins, and an inheritance among them that are sanctified by faith in me. Wherefore, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient unto the heavenly vision. Jesus Christ made it known to him. In his case, Jesus Christ made it known at the time of his conversion. Right in the beginning. Someone might think, well, you see, this type of a message should come near the end of the conference. Perhaps we should have come unto me first. Those that need to find Christ. Abide in me next, and then finally go. But you see, with Paul, it came right at the beginning. Right at the beginning. All else that Paul learned, he thought of in terms of his purpose in life. He was called to this, to be separated to the gospel. And everything else, he understood in terms of this job that he had. There was a task to do, a work to be done.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less haste to sing God's praise than when we first begun. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
As Robertson McQuilkin pointed out earlier, Charles Wenzel had a tremendous impact in the lives of his students. This is Carl Miller, a former student of Mr. Wenzel, and now on the staff of radio station WMHK at Columbia Bible College and Seminary.
Mr. Wenzel took a personal concern in my educational progress and personal life in general. My first child was born during my first quarter of Greek class taught by Mr. Wenzel. He continued his personal interest, and I believe prayer, for my family and me even after I graduated from Columbia Bible College and Seminary. My oldest brother was involved in a very serious violation of the law. I talked with Mr. Wenzel about 5 years ago about my brother's situation and the fact that he did not know the Lord. Since that time, Mr. Wenzel has periodically asked me about my brother and how he was doing. I had the joy of telling Mr. Wenzel about 2 years ago that my brother came to know the Lord. I am thankful for this man, Charles Wenzel, servant of God and friend to many. I might forget many of the finer points of Greek he taught, but I'll never forget his unique kind of humor and helpful teaching aids, such as a well-aimed eraser and a number of other effective memory aids. Mr. Wenzel opened his life to his students as he shared personal prayer requests and illustrations from his life of varied experiences, of struggle, and of victory.
Many people in the Columbia area were impacted by Charles Wenzel through his involvement with the Bethel Bible Camp in Columbia. For 30 years, the general director of Bethel Bible Camp. Two of those folks are the current camp managers, Henry and Mary Hennigan. You first met Charles Wenzel when? Henry, either one of you.
Mary,
I met Mr. Wenzel when I first came to Bethel Bible Camp in 1960. And he was a very warm man. And he taught us songs like Everybody Ought to Love Jesus, What the Wars May Come with Marching Feet and the Beat of the Drums. Songs that really meant a lot to us. And he even taught us theology. The first time I heard the word eschatology was through Mr. Wenzel, and I was just a teenager.
And you were talking eschatology, were you?
So, I mean, he taught us. I mean, when he came to us, he just treated us as people, you know. And we could go to him. He was very approachable. And I came to Bethel and worked as secretary out there, and I had to deal with him a lot. And I never got the opinion that I was bothering him, or he never was too busy.
Did he ever throw an eraser at you?
No, not really. But
pine cone, maybe.
But he was very lovable, and when my father died, I adopted him as my father. That's just how close I was to him. And I loved him, and I knew he loved me. And I greatly appreciate he and his family.
Well, there must have been some kind of relationship going there if he's the one that marries you. How did that happen?
Indeed. When he heard that I had proposed to marry, he had a father-son type talk with me and let me know how dear she was to his heart.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
And we asked him. Actually, I asked him if he would perform the ceremony, and he gladly said he would. And in fact, it's just as if Mary talked about her adopting his father. It was a father-type figure, no question about it, as he counseled with us and told us about marriage and about life. And it was a counsel that we really hadn't received anywhere else. So he did perform the ceremony, and he has been Papa Wenzel in a very special way to us.
You know, I remember him in the classroom setting. He would regularly refer to some aspect of home or family life. He would, in the context of some kind of classroom lecture, he would make an application that would relate to the family, relate to the home. Mm-hmm. He would talk about one of his kids or talk about his wife or something and make an application of, you know, that would just kind of be like an arrow straight through you. You knew he was right.
Mm-hmm.
He was a real forte.
Well, there's an example, too, of a practical time of it. After we got married, and I was in the Air Force at the time, and so I was to go from here. You know, I joined the Air Force to see the world, and so my first assignment was Charleston Air Force Base. And so before taking off for Charleston, he talked with us a bit, and we talked about a car, and in a very practical way, he says, now don't go buy a station wagon. There's just two of you. You don't need to howl all that extra air around. And it's just that kind of practicality.
Well, you know, another thing, he was a real man of faith, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes, yes.
One of the early days when they didn't have a car, needed a car. And so he really didn't feel like it was the Lord's will for him to go out and borrow money or anything for a car. And he was kind of wondering what to do. And one of the kids said, well, Daddy, let's just pray and ask Jesus to give us a car. And they did, and I forget all the details, but it happened. They were given a car. The man's faith was always a challenge to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I can't help but something I mentioned to you earlier today is that in terms of how to finish, our brother has given us example of how to finish. And I'm reminded of the Negro spiritual whose theme was that with your hand on the plow, hold on. And Mr. Wenzel, Reverend Wenzel, Papa Wenzel, indeed was that. And even as he had visions that was bigger than what we could see, and when we fell short of such visions, Mr. Wenzel still prayed. He was a man of prayer, and I especially remember that. We might meet on the campus or something, and we'd share something either way, and he'd say, "Let's pray." And right then, right on the spot, we'd pray. And he was that kind of man of prayer. Mary, you want to say?
I used to call him quite often. And for a while, we were prayer partners. He always had time for you, you know, and that's, I appreciated that greatly. Yeah.
Well, what about the work out at Bethel Bible Camp? He picked up that mantle from Mrs. McQuilkin, Dr. Robert C. McQuilkin's wife, didn't he?
Yeah, and Mrs. Sarah Overstreet. And he worked as general director up until about 83 when Roderick Fleming took over, and he still served on the board when he died.
Yeah. You know, even some of his Greek classes know about Bethel. The house we now live in at Bethel, the roof was put on by volunteer students from his Greek class on a weekend. Yes, and the other house that is there, and things that needed to be done around the campground. When Mr. Wenzel shared a burden and they prayed about it, students said, "Let's be a part." They just came forward like that, and so it was more than Mr. Wenzel's hand in Bethel. Students and anyone he knew would have a. They knew that Bethel was a heartthrob for him, and God has just greatly used that ministry to reach young people, especially in the Columbia area.
Leading people to the Lord Jesus Christ, whether children or adults, was a heartthrob of Charles Wenzel. We hear now more of the preaching and teaching ministry of Charles Wenzel. This time we hear from his message, God's Benefits.
Well, that night, while I was lying in bed,
The Lord seemed to speak, and he said, January 26. Do you remember where you were January 26, 1977? And I remembered. Because I was in the hospital after a radical operation for cancer. The bad news had come 2:30 in the afternoon, the day before the opening session of the winter quarter, when the doctor phoned me and said that cancer cells had been found. I called up Mr. McQuilkin right away. Somebody was going to have to take my courses. But you know, at that time, I saw again how weak I am, how small is my faith. The Lord had showed me that a couple of times before in an operation just after I was saved, and then again just before I went overseas in World War II. But boy, it was really evident at that time when that completely unexpected report came. But the Lord works. That same afternoon, Mr. McQuilkin and Mr. Hatch came over the house to pray with me. And then there was my precious wife and family. They got behind and were praying. And then the people at the church began to pray. In fact, the elders of the church at my request came and anointed me with oil and then prayed over me. And the whole CBC family began to pray. But you know, deep down inside, I still didn't have peace. Until God used an object lesson during a church service. Oh, the pastor didn't give the object lesson. It was a parent, a father, sitting up near the front of the church. And he really didn't look too happy, because parents in situations like this generally aren't too happy. But his little boy had to go to the bathroom right in the middle of the sermon. And so the father picked the little boy up, and he was taking him out. But my eyes saw the little boy. He was just cuddled up, resting on Daddy's shoulders. Not a care in the world then. Daddy was in charge. The bathroom was going to come. And the Lord spoke to me right then. I don't know what the preacher said, but the Lord spoke to me right then. And he says, why don't you be like that little child and just cuddle up, rest on my shoulders? And the Lord used that object lesson then to begin to answer the prayers of those who had been praying. That was one of God's benefits. And yet there were many other ways that the Lord showed his mercies and his benefits. I mentioned some people who prayed. There were a host of other believers who prayed. Not only students who were here, but former students prayed. Former faculty members, those who had moved on, they were praying. I had black Christians and white Christians praying, and brown Christians. All kinds. I had young and old Christians praying. I had Christians in different parts of the United States, in Europe, in Africa, in South America, in India, praying. I don't know how they all even heard about it. But later on, I found out they were praying. I had Christians praying that I never had met. I still haven't met. But they were praying. And then God used other ways. I got a telegram in the hospital from the father of one of you
It's a very short telegram. It came as a result of his having a quiet time in the morning, and he said, "Lord, today I'm not asking that you give anything for me, but would you give something for Mr. Wenzel?" And so he sent a telegram. This is what it said. "The axe head really did swim." You remember that miracle of Elisha? The axe head really did swim. What an encouragement. What an encouragement. And then the Lord used cards. Particularly humorous cards. First humorous card I got, I was wondering, why in the world are people sending humorous cards at a time like this? And then I realized the only reason they did was because they had faith that God was going to work. You don't send humorous cards if you don't believe God's going to work. The morning that I woke up for the operation, turned over my right side, and there was a little table there by the bed, and I saw a card. Somebody had put it there during the night. I looked at it, and it said, "I'll be praying for you all during the operation." It was a girl who had been in Bible survey the year before and had gone back to the university to continue training to be a nurse. But while she was in training to be a nurse, she was working in the hospital at night to help pay. She put that card there as the first thing I saw in the morning. My, how God encourages us. And then the Lord took care of the weather. It was a very cold winter. Snow was expected. And I knew no one was going to keep my wife from coming to the hospital. You could have chained her down and she'd have broken. She was going to get there, and I was thinking about the snow. But just a few flakes came, and that's all. No, we didn't have any snow. And then the car broke down at the hospital. And Wayne Pfeiffer, one of our staff members here, Sunday morning, he was out fixing the car. Got it running again. And then gifts came in. Faculty member gave pajamas. I don't know how they knew I needed pajamas, but it really came in handy. Some gave fruit. Some gave financial gifts. Now, I didn't have an expense like Mark was talking about. But even though we had insurance, it cost $700 for the operation that I had to pay. And then there was about $100 to $200 added expenses, not thinking about the hospital, but like long-distance phone calls and things like that.
This concludes side one. Please turn the tape over and continue listening on side two.